Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today, I'm talking to Aruba Anwar, founder of Aruba Beauty and an expert in the Middle Eastern beauty market. With Euromonitor International valuing this market at over $46 billion, projected to reach $60 billion by 2025, it undoubtedly has lucrative potential, especially if you're a brand founder. Aruba Beauty launched into the UAE last year, which was followed by a UK launch this February. Aruba herself is based in Dubai, and the brand reflects her own cultural heritage and the needs of makeup users in this region, which we'll delve into. The range focuses on eye makeup palettes, with eyes being identified as the most expressive feature among Middle Eastern women. Their formulas are dubbed skincare/makeup for the eyes and star Middle Eastern botanical ingredients with skincare benefits. There are so many reasons why it makes sense for beauty brands to tap into the Middle Eastern market, but as Aruba points out, it's important to understand the variety of cultural differences and sensitivities in this region and adapt your messaging accordingly. I really enjoyed this chat and hope you will too. So thank you so much for joining me, Aruba, on the podcast. It's really lovely to have you on. So firstly, I'd love to hear a bit more about your background and the story behind Aruba Beauty.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. And yes, I'd love to share more about my story and how it all started. So I finished my studies in the UK, graduated from the London School of Economics and moved back to Dubai, where my family was based. And it was just within 1 year of graduating that I was working on developing my beauty brand as a full-time job. So this love and passion for beauty was always there in me. And for me, makeup has always been very therapeutic. It's more about the experience that I enjoy when applying a certain beauty product or getting to know it more, playing it with color as well. So there's a lot of inner beauty element that I enjoy more than, you know, what's reflected outside onto the world as well. So this was a feeling, this was a passion that I wanted to share with women around the world. And that's how Aruba Beauty was born. It was based on the motto of Makeup an Icon, which is our tagline. And we created a product initially within the range, which is full of color. It's an eyeshadow palette, has 10 colors in it. It's a skincare makeup product. And what it's doing is it's more than makeup, because it's empowering everyone to embrace their uniqueness and become their own icon onto their journey of their lives. So I guess there were many highs and lows within the journey, and I'm sure we will get onto those during this podcast. But the highlight being how I chose to explore my passion with the support of my family, where my siblings at that time were also entrepreneurs. They were starting into their own startups as well. And it does encourage me a lot to explore the beauty industry and invest my time into researching it further.
And eye makeup in Middle Eastern beauty traditions, it's very significant, isn't it? Can you talk a little bit about that and how it ties into your cultural heritage and your own kind of personal expression?
Definitely. I think the ethos of Middle Eastern eye makeup is about demonstrating self-confidence. And I would say eyes are the windows to your soul. They are the most expressive feature on your face. So when it comes to eye makeup in the region, I think it still remains very much the focus of trends. And whether we look back at, you know, Kajal or Kohl being one of the signature product of makeup back in the days, which was used more to soothe or protect the eye or elongate the eye look and accentuate the feature a bit. But then also looking at it now, where, you know, runways and fashion and editorial looks are all about eyes. And, you know, you play with those vibrant hues or there's smoky eye makeup look coming out from the region. So I do feel eye makeup in general is quite looked upon when it comes to the Middle East and the Middle Eastern women wearing it and talking about it. So definitely it was a huge category to tap into when it came to creating the brand and creating our product. I think most importantly, it ties in very well with the self-expression element that was the foundation of Aruba Beauty and how we wanted to bring that experience out and encourage people to be more expressive. And like I said, I find eyes to be the most expressive feature. So it kind of ties in very well. And I also feel like when it comes to makeup or eye makeup specifically, it's kind of a ritual as well, in this region where, women get together in social gatherings, or the getting ready process is kind of looked upon as a ritual as well, because we love talking about what's new, what's trending, what makeup product is out there, and eyes being one of the most signature topic that we'd like to touch upon, and eye makeup standing out very, very much. So I think it all started with, Huda introducing lashes, fake lashes coming out as well. And it just blew up and it just became so important and evident. And I think, generally speaking, as well, elongated eyes or almond shaped eyes are kind of a signature feature of Middle Eastern women. So I did see that interrelation with it, that correlation with it. And it just simply ties in very beautifully with the story of the brand, I would say.
Definitely. And there are a lot of kind of ancient beauty practices like Kajal that have a rich history in the Middle East. Are any of these traditional methods sort of shaping modern beauty practices today?
I would say so. I mean, there's always a correlation into what people like to associate themselves with when it comes to new beauty trends, and that local culture or that inspiration that always ties in from heritage is something that keeps people uplifted. So if we look at eye makeup overall in the Middle East, I think one thing which stands out is the elongated eye look or the elongated eyeliner look that people loved, and it just accentuates the whole face and features. So if you look at it closely, it's simply just a kajal pencil, like a strong black kajal pencil being put on the eye and shaping it that way. So definitely it's more modernized now, and I think with increasing awareness and like increasing exposure to social media trends, inspirations all coming from the West as well, or from all around the world, really. Styles have changed, but that the beauty is that eye makeup still stays to be one of the core part of beauty processes. And if we look through editorial looks or magazines as well, I think eye makeup definitely stands out a lot more than anything else. Like, and it's something that you can be more playful with and more expressive with as well. Because it's not only, sometimes women would have their own phases in when you want to play a lot with matte eyeshadows. So, you want to go into those brown undertones as well, which is very popular here, and then add a bit of lashes and mascara, and you're done for the look. But then there are also days when you want to spend a lot of time building that cut crease look, adding a bit of glitter and shimmer. So it does define glamour, I think, overall in the region. And that's something which is very interesting to see how it's evolving.
And can we talk a little bit about this Middle Eastern beauty market? Because obviously it's booming, and the beauty industry in the Middle East and North Africa is expected to hit, I think it's 60 billion by 2025. So what do you think is kind of fueling this? And why do you think that that market is accelerating at such a fast rate?
Well, I think first of all, it is all linked with the growth of the economy, which is what we are seeing. Saudi Arabia booming in its economic growth, increased oil prices, which kind of just increases the spending power in the region. So looking at, some stats and just considering the GCC, the Gulf region in particular, it has got the highest per capita spending on beauty compared to the rest of the world. So I feel that just says a lot, and that contributes a lot to that number, which we've just spoken about. But there is also a rise in social media influence within this industry, and I just feel it's the influence of TikTok, Snapchat, and more and more users actively getting onto social media. I mean, if you look at the UAE, almost 99% of our population is active social media users. So that influence of social media on the purchasing decision, specifically when it comes to beauty, is again, I think, a very big contributing factor to this. But then, like I mentioned before, it's also the ritual, it's also the cultural influence that we enjoy beauty. We love talking about beauty products, and beauty and self-care spending in general or spending in luxury is very positively perceived in this region. So there's a rise in wellness resorts, professional treatments, spas, salons. All of that kind of contributes towards this, you know, outlook of beauty becoming big in the region.
A lot of brands are trying to launch in the Middle East, but obviously it's a very diverse place and different countries have their own kind of beauty practices and approach to it. So how can brands tweak their products and their marketing to fit in with countries like the UAE versus Saudi Arabia or somewhere like Algeria? Because obviously they're very different.
Yes, totally. I think looking at new brands and kind of young brands, I think first of all, it's very important to define your own brand identity before trying to fit into a certain market, because somewhat you can get lost in not developing your own identity in those early years and trying to please the customers from different regions, really. So that's a key element to have in mind, very clear what you want to do as a brand and what's your mission and goal. Have that clear, but then customers or you know, your followers, they do love seeing that connection with the campaigns or beauty campaigns that you put up as a brand. So once you are through that phase, once you know your own identity and kind of work towards it and have discovered your own niche, I do feel you need those tailored marketing techniques that would support in connecting with your customers in these different regions. So if we look at the example of UAE and let's say Saudi Arabia, both are very close regions. A lot of things are similar, but then if it comes to marketing and kind of speaking to the masses in, let's say, Saudi Arabia, perhaps Arabic might be a better language to communicate than English. Whereas it might not be the case or in the UAE, where we have got a multicultural population, it's a lot of expats in the region. So it's these little elements. And also I feel the tone of voice that might differ for when you're talking to a woman in Dubai or compared to when you're talking to a woman in Riyadh. So you have to keep these elements in mind. And I also feel from a consumer perspective, they love localization. They love looking at you know, aspects or features shown onto your page or shown as brand assets that they are familiar with. So, you know, filming in location, which is kind of a popular location in Dubai, actually helps us to connect with our local customers here because they see the brand coming out there. It's for real. It's in real settings. That connection is very important. But talking about Aruba Beauty specifically and our journey here, because we are a UAE native brand, it was kind of easier for us to connect and get to know the market more. And even our product range is very much inspired by the Middle East. We have got eyeshadow palettes that are talking, you know, that are talking to the Arabic women because it's either through the name of the colors. Let's say there's a palette called Majestic Queen and it has a color named Dubai. And that's the connection that people want to look out for when they look at a Middle Eastern brand serving that market. And there's a shade called Sheikha, let's say, which means queen in Arabic. So I do feel these little elements that just enhance the whole experience of your customer, these cultural elements are quite key. But I would always go back to looking from a broader perspective, looking at where the brand is aimed to grow and what other markets are then added on as well, to not overtake completely our marketing language in a way that we lose our own identity and just talk about, you know, one certain market, which is very challenging, I must say, because as a new brand, you want to explore your niche and kind of stick to that. But it's really a process.
Yeah, I think it's a case of just trying to get established in your kind of home market first, and then you kind of get a better sense of who you are as a brand anyway. Does that make sense?
100%.
And Aruba Beauty, it's very much about sort of beauty and wellness. Do you think a lot of Middle Eastern consumers are embracing that skincare as makeup trend now?
Well, definitely. I think there is... So what we like to call is the clean glam ritual, and we like to promote it within our brand as well, because we don't only look at beauty or Aruba Beauty serving just the beauty lovers, but it's also a whole wellness aspect that's around the brand. So a wellness lifestyle where you're eating healthy, you are going for your regular exercises, you're staying positive for your mind, body and soul. And I just feel overall within the region, there is a rise in skincare infused products, and a lot of brands, local brands, are coming out with these kind of innovations, only because the consumers are now becoming very conscious to know what they are putting on their skin and why they are, you know, why a certain ingredient exists, because education is there, awareness is there, consumers are becoming conscious, social media is there to talk to them and make them aware of what's happening. So, you know, terms like vegan and sustainability are becoming very much normal here. And it's also a fine line as to brands not mislead consumers, but also stick to them honestly. But it's just something that people love hearing more about now. And it's just a matter of making yourself aware of it and kind of ticking those aspects off, because there is a lot more than just good performing products now in the beauty market and in this region as well, not only in the West. So it's just a matter of making sure brands are aware of what they are offering and how true and transparent they are with their customers.
Definitely. And it's also about kind of cultural sensitivity, isn't it? If you're launching into a new market. And I think there are a lot of conceptions, particularly about women who wear hijab and their beauty routines. What are the kind of biggest misconceptions that you've come across in your when you've seen brands launch in that region?
Well, I think it's been a misconception, really, that modesty and simplicity is considered to be not glamorous, whereas the way I look at things, and I look at it very closely from my end, is that you can still be very glamorous and stylish while dressing modestly. So that's one thing that that's one thing that I feel is always not looked upon the right way. And you know, even the application of makeup, like, okay, fine, people are covering their heads due to religious reasons, but there's nothing that stops them from putting in a glam face or a glam and eye makeup being very huge in that case as well, again, because I feel to accentuate those features that are shown out and just to feel good about yourself as well, I just feel makeup and glamour does come a long way ahead. And I also feel it's also the self-care culture that is very much part of this region that is somewhat not appreciated enough, because let's say hair care, if women are covering their head, it's not necessary that they're not taking care of their hair. I mean, hammam or you know, just putting oil, these are very popular rituals of the region. And it is something which happens in large numbers in the region as well. So I would say these are some misconceptions that are considered not so widely happening, but they are in reality not true. So,
And you mentioned about sort of self-care and that sort of being a really big part of the way of life in the Middle East, maybe more so than in like traditional Western beauty markets. Are there any other differences that you think sets kind of middle, like urban middle class consumers in the Middle East apart from beauty markets like Europe and the US?
I think, to be honest with you, I feel like the way people look at makeup and beauty now, especially post pandemic, is quite different in both regions. And we are kind of aligning together as well, because social media is huge now and people are getting influenced by one another, really. So I would no longer feel that Middle East is way behind, you know, catching up on trends, or our influencers as well from the region are quite liked by people from all around the world, really. So there are quite a lot of similarities than differences. But one thing which I noticed when I initially started working on the brand and clean beauty and clean ingredients and, you know, that information and knowledge and education that I wanted to gain was quite limited here. And over the years, what is good to see is that there's a rise amongst demand for clean beauty products and people appreciating that aspect of clean beauty as well, because I think it was potentially something which was more appreciated in the US or Europe earlier, but then now there's a rise within clean beauty niche here, with more online-based retailers also coming out specifically serving for this market, and people consciously looking out for vegan and cruelty-free products and putting their time and effort to know a bit more about why the brand exists and what are their missions as well, and not just simply fall for a certain look or product that they would see online. So I think education element is increasing. People are becoming more and more aware of what exists and where the market is leading into. And that accessibility element is also there. Like, it's easier now, like with the rise of online shopping, to get a product from anywhere in the world to be delivered in this region. So that competition has also on the rise, with Korean beauty as well rising a lot, and you know, people getting inspired with it, social media trends leading the way as well. So definitely markets are merging from what I can see.
Definitely. And especially when you think of like the increasing expat population in the UAE, do you think that sort of has a real influence on beauty trends in the Middle East now?
That definitely. I think with expat population, simply if we talk about the role of brands, brands have to be adaptive to serve to everyone. And just kind of, because it might not just be the local Arab community that you're talking to, it will be a huge mix of population from coming from different ethnicities, different color, different age. So that connection that you build with your customer is very important. And for them, it's for brands, it's becoming challenging with the rising mix of population in a certain region to make them feel connected to the campaigns that you're planning, because as a small business, you can't be serving everyone and you can't be including everyone in the campaign either. But I think one thing which supports Aruba Beauty very well in that sense is that when we started off with a mission without perceiving a certain customer or a certain ethnicity in mind. And that's why we serve beauty lovers. And it's regardless of their age, ethnicity or color, but it's mainly just the mission that we are talking about here and the message that we want to convey to people. So like I said, for brands to have the understanding of who their customers are, which might be a whole lot of mix, especially for new businesses, because you're just exploring the market and you're just getting to know who your customers really look like. Yeah. But it's definitely challenging, but it's a lot of opportunities at the same time. You know, like, you can never limit yourself to one kind of customer, and then it just broadens your prospects as well in terms of serving the market.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time, isn't it? And you said that customers are kind of looking now for brands that are clean and sustainable. How important is a brand to be halal certified? Is that still a key component when it comes to launching a successful beauty brand in the Middle East?
I think definitely there are certain countries still in the region which would appreciate it a lot. And as much as I would say it's good to have the certification on hand, it's not a necessary. Because people are becoming aware of more international certifications like vegan, cruelty-free, and they kind of appreciate that a lot more. So you're meeting those international standards by having those kind of certifications. And it might not be necessary to have the halal certification or promote it so extensively. So I would just say it is good to have it, but you might not want to overly, you know, build your brand on it or just present it as one of the claims, because there are other stronger claims that you can make, which the younger population and the Gen Z would like more in terms of the product being sustainable, the product being vegan, cruelty-free, clean, non-toxic, you know, paraben-free, sulfate-free. Like, these are the terms that people like to hear more. And at the same time, you should not forget the cultural aspects of promoting a product, from what I feel. Like, because you are in this region, there are certain rules, there are certain advertising guidelines, regulations that you still have to follow as a brand. So definitely customers, they want to see their representation in any marketing campaign. And that is going to be the topmost priority, and that local aspect as well. But I wouldn't consider it to be a very big aspect of the other kind of certifications that you may want to look into.
And talking about ingredients, obviously the Middle East has got so many amazing plants and like ingredients that are indigenous to the region. How does Ariba Beauty sort of incorporate those in your own formulas? What are the kind of key ingredients would you say are native to the Middle East that you would use?
Well, I have been very passionate about formulations and ingredients, and that was my starting point for this brand journey as well. And thinking about the Middle Eastern beauty, I feel if we were to bring to life the Middle Eastern beauty experience, one of the main factor was by using the ingredients that are inspired by our local culture here. And within my formulation, there was a good balance of the ingredient having a beautiful cultural story, but then also the functionality aspect of it. So if I am to mention a few, we have Candelilla wax, which is a desert plant wax, and it protects the skin and holds hydration in the skin. So while it's something that people are familiar of, there's this beautiful, connection with the region of where this wax is coming from. But then we did put in a lot of thinking around why it exists in the formula and what it's meant to do. And then similarly, we have Carnauba wax, which is coming from a palm tree. And it's considered to be one of the hero waxes out here in the region. And then the functionality of it is providing that skin barrier, as well as giving that glossy effect that we wanted within our innovative cream glitter essence formulation. So that tie is very beautiful because you want to take an ingredient, but you don't want to have it just for marketing purposes. Like that functionality is very important. And I think with our formulation, we made it very simple that we want skincare aspects in the formula mixed with great intensity of pigments, but then we don't want to have anything for no reason. And that's why, even ingredients like argan oil, which again is probably considered like a liquid oil coming in from the region, has got nourishing skin benefits as well. But then it's also providing that boost to your lashes, which is great for hair growth. So everything that was incorporated within the formulation, be it coming from an inspiration from the Middle East, was only to make sure that it adds on to the performance of the product.
Definitely. I think the functionality aspect is so important. And unless you're in the industry, you don't realize how many brands just add these ingredients for marketing purposes that actually play no part in the actual formula. So it's great to hear. Yeah, that's kind of front and center of your brand, that the ingredients actually do serve a purpose.
Definitely. I think it's a fine line, really, because you do want to, like, customers do want to hear those relevance and beautiful stories around it, but it's also that you don't want to overly put in something for no reason. And I was very keen on knowing at each and every step, and therefore I headed to the UK, worked with cosmetic scientists there in our lab to make sure that I am aware of what's in the formula. And we kept working on renderations just to make sure that we achieve the performance that we want with the limited ingredients and like a huge no list, keeping in mind of keeping it free from toxins as well. And that's where we got with the formula.
And what's been the feedback you've received so far from like Middle Eastern consumers, and how has that kind of informed your future product development?
Well, I think when launching the brand, one thing that I had kept in mind is that connection with our customers. So wanted to create a very customer-centric brand and build a community around it. And I'm very pleased to see the response because it's just been 1 year that we've been out in the market, and all we get to hear is the product is easy to use, it's very pigmented, and it's adding on to that what we wanted to offer to the customers. So it's adding on to that experience that we get to hear because we have managed to, so we are an online-based business. At the moment, we're just serving through our own website, but we did manage to do some physical pop-ups and participate in them where we got the chance to see our customers face to face. And those initial reactions of those customers when they come and try the product and swatch the formula and that wow element, that joy, that excitement that comes across has been very overwhelming for us. And I feel it's also when the brand is out there for a while and you see your customers talking about certain elements that are resonating with them, is what we'd like to build up more on. So like I said, people are finding these palettes to be easy to blend, easy to use. And I think that's a huge gap in the eye category in the beauty industry, that people are kind of scared of getting eyeshadow palettes.
Yes, and we're all scared. A lot of people are scared of it. You're absolutely right.
Exactly.
Myself so, included, you know, I write about this stuff. It's like it's still kind of intimidating.
Exactly. Like, what do I do with these 10 colors? How do I apply? So we incorporate these feedback into our marketing and our visuals and content that comes ahead, making sure that we are answering those questions. So when I was creating this brand, because it's coming out, because I have no background in makeup artistry, you know, it's just like coming with pure beauty love. I wanted to create it for beauty lovers and wanted to connect with my customer in the same way that they would find it easy to apply in their normal day-to-day life. They don't necessarily have to be makeup artists or know the difficult techniques of doing a certain eye look in a certain way. And therefore, the way the product is structured is also there's a day quad, there's a night quad, there are creams within the formula, which makes it very exciting. And the whole experience of using an eye palette has become easier for a lot of people. So we kind of listen to our feedback and make, you know, branch the marketing more in that way so we can reach more and more people who are looking for such products.
Yeah, it's about kind of educating them, isn't it? Rather than just saying, here you go, now go off and apply it. It's like, here's how you can actually get the most out of it. Yeah,
totally. Because lots of people, like you said, wouldn't know how to work with eyeshadows, but it's just like sometimes you don't need to use 5-6 different shades in one eye look. Sometimes, you know, just using one or two maximum shades can do the job. So like you said, it's a lot about getting those tutorials through to them, educating them, making sure that they know how to apply it to get the best experience out of the product.
What else have you got coming up on the horizon for Aruba Beauty?
Well, I think at the moment, it's definitely focusing on the eye category. And we have got 4 eyeshadow palettes out in the market, a beautiful range of colors. There's something for everyone for sure. And in terms of markets as well, it's the UAE that we are branching out of. And now we are also serving the UK. So I would say it's exciting. It's great to see the expansion happening within this 1 year and having 4 products out in the market within the 1 year as well. So we definitely intend to stick to the eye category because I feel it's one of our strengths to be serving a niche that is not fully tapped into. Skincare makeup again in eyeshadows is something that not many people are aware of. So we want to work on educating them and we want to work on telling them the importance of the brand, the essence of the brand, our message being makeup an icon and giving it out to them, you know, letting them experience this therapeutic side of makeup as well. So there's a lot that we need to do from our end to reach out to more and more people and get the palettes out in more and more hands.
If there's any sort of advice that you could give to beauty brands that are planning to launch in the Middle East, what would you say?
I think it's very important to first understand that it has to be with any kind of business, not only beauty, but just make sure that you love what you're doing enough because it's not an easy journey. It's a very challenging phase. And there are going to be many ups and downs within the journey. So you need to love what you're doing, first of all.
That's the main thing. That's the most important thing. If you're not loving it, then what is the point?
And I think through the years with my experience with Aruba Beauty, from when I started until now, there was COVID that came in between. There were quite a lot of challenges that we faced from the formulation and supply chain and as well. But the one factor that didn't let me give up was my passion and how passionate I was to make this happen and, you know, to bring the brand out there to the market because I believed in my vision. So definitely love what you do, what you are choosing to do. And then secondly, I would give a lot of value to market research. I think at this time, the industry is full of beautiful products, amazing brands. We definitely don't need something to be repeated a lot. Like there are definitely amazing products out there. So what you are trying to create should come with a purpose and with an understanding of why is it needed and where it exactly fits. So I did spend a lot of time researching in the market, finding that gap and understanding how I can set ourselves apart and just getting my message clear in my mind first before I'm presenting it out to the world. So, definitely. Yeah, and definitely, I think just sticking through those challenges and making sure that you are getting the right kind of help and support in areas that you need to. Because, again, as a beauty founder or any founder, you can't be ticking off all boxes at the same time. So you do need to make sure you have got some support and a good team around you as well.
Amazing. Well, all the best with the future of Aruba Beauty. I mean, it's a stunning brand and deserves to do really well. So thank you so much for coming on podcast, Aruba. I hope to chat to you again soon in the future. For now, thank you so much. And it's been lovely speaking with you. And I'm sure people listening will take many useful tips away from it. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.